you start fighting with that thing inside your head, you know, to go, am I good enough? You know, like that voice keeps getting louder all the time. But I mean, you've been bringing up the voice quite a bit. And what I've learned, and I think this is the biggest thing that comedy taught me, and somebody said it well, and they said, unfortunately, in this game, you can't find your voice if you don't use your voice. There's just no way. You can watch a million tutorials. You can get advice from all over the place. But if you're not actually putting in the work, dusting yourself off and just going and trying every single day, it's never going to happen.
Creatives who live their art deserve to be heard. This is the philosophy behind Creative Allies, a new podcast from the V&A Waterfront Artist Alliance program. For these conversations, we invite experienced creatives to share their stories as a gesture of allyship to emerging creatives, lending their support, advice, and encouragement. Hi, I'm your host, Lerato Sokulu.
And I'm your other host, Carol Williams. It's so good to have you with us again today.
Yay! And we're wearing leopard print.
Yes, this is something that all of you should know. We didn't plan it, but we are both in the leopard print. And I was saying to Lerato earlier that one of my mantras in life is there's no such thing as too much leopard. So,
no, there isn't. Even my headband is leopard.
Notes.
It's just, I'm just short of having red lipstick today, but it's too early for that.
Totally.
All right. So in this episode, we are going to focus on how to find your voice as a creative. And this is something that I'm also currently working through in my discipline, where I'm a comedian. And when I started comedy, I thought I was just going to talk about my crazy family because my grandmother's like one of those grandmothers.
She's good content.
Yes. Like I knew I was going to be rich just from telling her stories. But as I got in my journey, I didn't know I was a little bit of an activist. And so now my comedy is taking a different direction where it's no longer just about my family and I, but about the things that I care about within my society. For instance, tiny house living. It really bothers me because of shacks and we won't get into that. But so that's the focus of today's conversation. How do you find what you want to say and how you want to say it? And as a creative who still needs to make ends meet, especially because there's some things I definitely cannot say if I want to be hired.
Yes.
And there's some things that are social responsibility that I have to say, ooh, okay, what is my value system? Can I sacrifice getting jobs if I say this, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Like, what's the line? Where's
exactly.
Professionalism versus authenticity? How do you find the sweet spot for yourself?
Exactly. And that's why we have these amazing creatives today who I look up to who are going to help us answer some of these questions. We've invited comedian, actor, and entertainer Donovan Goliath, as well as poet, playwright, actor, and producer Esphogazi Jonas, both award-winning creatives, to offer their perspectives. Hello.
So good to have you guys here.
Moleni.
How are you guys doing? You guys all right?
Good. Yeah, absolutely. Really happy to be here.
All right.
Yeah.
So, Donovan, you're a comedian, actor, voiceover artist, TV presenter, and creative director. Some of our listeners might know you from your moves on Strictly Come Dancing.
You took it very far. That was like a long time ago.
It was, but
we do deep dives on this podcast.
Sure.
And you are from the Transkei, which is where I was born also.
Downy?
Mthatha. North Crest.
No, I was also born in Mthatha. I grew up in North Crest.
Wow.
And I'm in Southernwood right now.
Oh, wow. Would you look at that? Well, yes.
Yeah,
well, hi, Mkhaya.
We can have a reunion here on this,
right?
On this podcast.
I mean, I'm not Xhosa, but I identify as Xhosa. I'm actually Zulu, and I always have to... Yes, my grandmother was a nurse, and she... The Zulus are a bit hectic also, to be honest. They just didn't...
Wow, are we going there?
Yeah. My grandmothers were unconventional women, and as a Zulu wife, there are certain things you can't get out of culturally. And so they were modern women, and they were just like, you know what? The Xhosa seem to be more astute in global ways of thinking. Let's go there.
Make
and they left.
Move.
Yeah,
sure.
They built their whole lives. And then, Esphogazi, you are a playwright, a poet, an actor, and a producer. And your most recent stage production, We Are Dying Here, was adapted into an award-winning film, which is now on Showmax.
Yes.
Pew, 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 pew.
Amazing.
How, How does it feel hearing that?
You know what? It actually was on Showmax, right? And that's right. But I think after this, we can just pitch. We'll be like, hey, bring it back.
Yes. Bring
it they back. Removed right? it?
Yes, it was on for 18 months. So it okay. was the agreement.
I'm going to write a letter. I'm in that you. Era of adulting now where if I'm unhappy
you want to see the manager
about something. Like I make a lot of amagwinya and I use a certain brand. And then that certain brand wasn't there when I needed it. So I went to another brand. And the difference was crazy. So I want to write a letter to my brand and say, you know what? You guys are making flour so well.
I'm hoping so also positive letters, not just dear manager letters.
No, I'm not complaining. Okay. I want to compliment them on the fluffiness of their flour. Oh. It is absolutely perfect. But in hopes that they will give me flour then for like the rest of the year.
That's not much of a... That's not a Hallmark card you'll ever find. Well done on your flower.
Yeah. I feel like it's a gap there.
If there's anything we learned from the pandemic is how to use flour. Okay. Mm-hmm.
This is true.
You know what you should do? I think there's an opportunity to write a campaign here where, or even like this Pokazi, you should join forces because we need to give them their flowers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yes, you can play on give somebody their flower. There's an idea.
Well, like, give me my flower because we're telling you being give me my
money. I love this. Creatives discussing ways to make money. I love it.
On a podcast about creativity. This is very good, son.
All right. Let's get straight into it to kick it off. You know, let's start at the very beginning. I'll start with you, Donovan. How did you know that you were a creative? What were the indicators that this was the field you were going to enter?
I didn't know at all. I think we all grew up in a place where these disciplines were virtually non-existent, you know, when we grew up. I mean, I was born in 83. I grew up in the 80s. Imagine trying to tell my dad, for example, that I wanted to go and study graphic design, which I knew absolutely nothing about. So I used to draw a lot. I loved it. I didn't understand that I could turn it into something. It just felt like a natural kind of hobby that some kids are able to do. I'm going to fast forward quite a bit. I was in a rap group, Mtata, called Outbreak as well. So I had like 2 years, my stint of being a rapper, Mtata, and I thought I'd go into music. That didn't work out. And then we had a substitute teacher who came in, Jason Crane, and I'm going to give him his flowers right now, who came in and did extramural art classes with us. And, you know, I obviously took them and, you know, he saw that I had potential and asked me if I wanted to go into graphic design. And I knew nothing about this. You know, I was at a school in Mtata called Zingisa Comprehensive High School, and there wasn't a single person there who was going to tell me what this thing is and, you know, what I could turn it into. And then he showed me some portfolios and I absolutely loved it. I didn't understand why I did. It just connected with me and took a chance and applied for graphic design, you know, and I spent 90% of my first year in the library just learning. So I didn't disappoint my parents at all. I mean, I also had a loan.
No pressure.
That's a motivating factor.
Yeah. So I never knew that I wanted to be to do what I mean, I do a million things right now. And everything that I've done up until now, I've never had on a wish list at all.
I see.
Do you think that's maybe because you didn't know how to imagine it?
It's that, but I also think that there's privilege in coming from a small town and not being exposed, because when you move from a small town to a big city, you're inundated with so much, and in a positive way. You come in here and you're a sponge and you just take on everything, and things that people take for granted you see as opportunities. And you know, I guess, to use a terrible phrase, you know, you come here and as a creative person, you see sounds, you see colors, you see all of these things that people just seem to walk by every day, and you find clever ways to turn it into something. So I think when you arrive as an empty vessel, you allow yourself to explore and be as curious as possible. And I think that's the fuel and the start of magic. I don't want to, you know, get too deep into this, but I think that's where the magic lies, is the curiosity.
That's so beautiful. Wow.
Lovely. And Spokazi, take us back. How did you get into your discipline?
I think there are some similarities to Donovan, because Nankulele Komani as a spectrum. So again, small towns in the Eastern Cape.
Yeah.
That lack of exposure to careers. The first encounters. So books were probably a big part of my childhood. Spent a lot of time in the library. So there's a sense of imagination and, you know, disappearing into these worlds and so on. But I think it was through a traveling theater company, actually, that came to our school that opened my eyes up to the idea of career, although that came later for me. but it was, you know, experiencing this work in the school hall. And then, you know, I was fortunate that our schools had aesthetics, we had plays and so on. So you participate in those things and that creativity was always there. But the idea of career only came probably in high school, and then immediately it had to be nipped because my parents' question was, okay, but how are you going to make a living?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
when they looked around.
Daunting question.
Hey, and now you're like 16,
how
17.
Are we
like,
going
I
to
don't
stop
know.
Paying for you?
Yeah. That is actually the real question, yes. Yeah. It's not so much about you. It's about, yes.
No, listen. It's a valid question because I had to stop my mom from sending me job applications for the government because it got to that point in the beginning of my career where I went to acting school, but then I discovered that maybe that's not what I'm most passionate about. It's just because I can do it well. And so there was a 2-year period where I wasn't working or, you know, focused on working, just figuring myself out. And my parents were like, okay, listen, while you figure yourself out, how about you come back from Joburg and figure yourself out at home?
Because and get a job. Yeah.
It's cheaper.
And it was a monumental point in my career because I was like, whoa, wake up. As much as it's supposed to be fun to do what I do, there is a business aspect to it. And that's what I think as creatives, we sometimes forget is that you're so talented. You can do all these things. You're a multi-hyphenate artist. But then does this gift that you have, can it sustain you? Are you also living a good life? Are you working as an artist? And so these conversations are also geared to, you know, shed some light on emerging creatives that going into finding your voice, you don't have to know your voice immediately. It's something that comes over time. And I'm sure by the time we reach our 50s, it will also look completely different.
I do want to just add something about, you know, because the journeys are going to look different. Like for me, it wasn't a straight shot. So once I heard that, I was also like, how am I going to make a living?
Yeah.
And so I registered for biotechnology. So I was in the sciences for a year because I failed. First time failing. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, so I'm sure, you know, at least Donovan did not disappoint his parents. I definitely did. I definitely did. To your point of academic exclusion where they're like, And then I was like, okay.
Wow.
So yeah. Yeah. And
I want to hear more about that.
Well, it was in the first year. I'd failed the first year of science. Okay. And because science at university is also very different to science in high school. And I'd only really gone there because I knew someone who did it. You know that thing of like they bring someone
out. Oh, that seems like a good idea.
just apply.
So I failed that first year, academic excluded. And then I was like, please, let me go do BA. At least I'll go do a BA in English and drama. And then I, you know, I can at least pursue this particular trajectory without, you know, the but it can't be theater and performance.
Yeah.
So I had to do, I did a BA. So thankfully the university was like, okay, we'll give you another chance. Let's see what you got.
This is a different like stream.
Yes. So they allowed me to re-register. Right. And and also I passed English. I had English as an elective during this, my year doing science. So maybe that was a sign. And then, so I actually registered for BA in English and Drama. And then I remember when I got there, one of my lecturers was like, oh, we think you have potential as an academic. Like, you should really consider it. I was like, okay, yeah. Let me do art as a side hustle. Mm-hmm. Not even a hustle. Side hustle wasn't a thing then. This was late 2000s. No. So I was still doing, you know, I was performing poetry, opening for people,
I see.
Doing poetry at church, that kind of thing. So it was like a side thing. So that this idea, because also that's a big shift that happens, you know, from this is a side thing, this is a hobby, this is this, to actually this is a career. This is a calling. This is the path that I've chosen. So I did, you know, undergrad, honors, masters, and then I was in the middle of working on my PhD proposal in, I think it's 2017, and I was like, why am I doing this? It felt like this next step for whom, right? This natural next step of, okay, I'm already in this academic space, let me just continue and become a lecturer and so on. And then I remember one day I spoke to my sister, I was busy with the application, and I stopped, I went to her room and I was like, I don't think I want to do this. I need to try this. I need to try this art thing full time.
Give it a chance.
And I'm at landing yoga be corner way too, but from then on, I've been at it full time.
And that's what choosing art as your work demands of you. Because I think for a lot of us, it starts off with, I must get a job so that I can be independent and start to lead this life while you're still doing the art on the side. And then there comes that day where the art starts to also reveal itself and saying, hey, actually, I'm your thing. And then somebody offers you money. And then you're like, wait a minute. And then there's the value aspect of it, of the why. Donovan, what would you say your why is, looking back at where you come from in your career? What is your why right now in all the disciplines that you do?
I haven't figured it out yet. It's a constant search. And I think for most creative people, you know, always searching for their why. I sometimes think that I have it. And then I go, nah, it can't be that, because I like too many things. I've been involved in so many different disciplines. It's sometimes a gift and a curse to be skilled in a lot of different things, because it gets to a point, like right now I'm at an age, I was actually in a therapy session just yesterday, chatting to my therapist about this kind of thing, where you're at an age right now, like I got two kids, I'm over 40, and then I go, no man, I should be mastering something. I should be mastering a skill. You know, I don't think I have the energy mentally and physically to be running around and operating the way I did in my 20s and 30s. I think the next phase for me is mastery. So, you know, kind of like list everything that I can do. I mean, gosh, I direct, I write, I can do comedy. I haven't done comedy in 4 years, but I can obviously still do it. I do corporate gigs. I design. There's just so many things, and I love every single one of them. So right now I'm in the process of kind of finding that one discipline that incorporates and integrates all of those things. So I always get my fix, because I always have to fight with myself. You know, society's rules, the whole jack of all trades and don. I hate that. You know, I hate that notion. I also hate the notion that, you know, we live in a country and maybe even a continent that doesn't praise or take art or the arts seriously. You know, I think we still have a long way to go to really start changing people's minds. Like I always think to myself, how many people, if I look outside this window, are walking around here who are so talented, who could be the next, you know, genius out there in whatever discipline, but only because they've been conditioned to believe that this is not a real thing. You need to have a 9-to-5 and you need to fall into some sort of system, you know? So I think now, to answer your question, I don't really know what my why is, but I know that I love to entertain people. I always incorporate wit and to steal, you know, I guess two quotes from the most unlikely source, Jim Carrey.
Love.
If you were ever trying to find your purpose and you were struggling, you need to ask yourself this one question. What do they need that your talent can provide? The second you realize it's not really about you, but like how you can kind of shift the world and change vibrations based on your skill and what you love to do every single day, you'll know what your purpose is. And the other one is, and sometimes it's just a framing thing. When you think Jim Carrey, you think, ah, comedian, funny, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes, that's so, it's almost demeaning. And he goes, if somebody had to ask me, what do you do every day? What is your why? And his answer is, my job is to free people from concern.
Sure.
And I love
that. That's so much. Great. Yeah.
Because then you go, oh, shucks. You see, he's taking it seriously. You know, we think that it's just, you know, he's just the guy who makes jokes. But he goes, no, for the 1 hour or hour and a half or 2 hours that you watch my film, I want you to forget about your problems just for a little bit. And that's my job.
Yeah.
And that's how I want to change my thinking at the moment. How do I free people from concern? Which I think is so brilliant. And I mean, I think Spokazi is in that exact same position. You know, that's what she does. You know, you captivate people with your art. And poetry is an incredibly difficult thing. But to make somebody just stop and forget about every single problem in the world and listen to and hang on to every single word is incredibly powerful and an amazing thing to be able to do.
Yeah. And that's why I hate it when people don't take art seriously, because actually we are saving somebody somewhere, somehow. We saw it again during that other thing we went through that I was just
thinking about that, actually. Yeah, the pandemic that won't be named.
Yeah, you said the word.
I didn't say the actual name, though. But and the fact that we immediately were so much more aware of the arts and creativity and so much more engaged in those spaces and needed it actually for sanity.
It's like someone walking up to Donovan and say, hey, tell me a joke, and you're like, bro, like I actually research and I write this down. I don't just go up on stage and I start waffling. Spokazi, to you, you use your voice in your art and you've got some messages for us. So you obviously have a stance towards the world.
safe to say.
You know, so here you are about to do this PhD and then you decide, no, I'm going to go in this direction. what has helped you define your voice in your work? How did your voice come about? Because you definitely have a voice.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, just connecting to something that Donovan was saying, there is this evolution, this constant evolution. My mentor, one of my mentors is 76 this year, and he says he wishes he had more lifetimes because he's just starting to figure it out. Wow. And he, you know, I mean, he's been doing this since he was 17. Mm. So to really understand that the voice itself for me is something that is not stagnant. It's okay. Something that grows with you. Mm. So the voice I have today is not the voice I had 5 years ago, is not the voice that I had 20 years ago. But also I think our voices are a composite of where we come from. Mm. So when we think of voice, I think about my mother, I think about my father, I think about my grandparents, I think about the community. So I'm always drawing from these various wells. I think the place of, even if you think about Imbongi, for example, in society, it's not to be this individual who's the, you know, shining star. Of,
yeah.
It's there's not only a commitment, but an obligation to community to say that the things that I'm saying are things that belong. And especially because it's a tradition. Uba Imbongi is a tradition. I'm not Imbongi in that sense. That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
But it's a tradition of things that have been passed down. It's about archiving. It's about being a kind of repository of knowledge that spans generations. So I always think that our voices themselves are, whether you're drawing from bell hooks and Old Lord, or you're drawing from Umakazi, Umakulu, you know, you're speaking about your grandmother.
Yeah.
Our voices are shaped.
Mm.
And so the more, it's very difficult to just be in isolation as an artist, as much as I think that's kind of a Western notion of artistry. It's complicated because we're not just the community, but I think the more, for me, I find that the more I connect to community, the more my voice and work is refined because I suddenly understand that it belongs to a larger context and I have a responsibility that I carry with me. And so that's why my work tends to have kind of provocation, because sometimes, yes, it certainly is about that suspension of concern, but sometimes it's me saying, come, we are so distracted. We are so, everything is moving past us. Our own lives are moving past us. So let's sit and actually pay very close attention to what concerns us so that we can feel through it together as people. And then see what comes out on the other end and who we can be, and hopefully closer and more connected as a result.
It locates you, I think. Mm-hmm. It locates you in a time and a place and a history. And that's actually what shapes your message,
I'm sure.
Yeah. Like that's actually where you draw your ideas and what becomes your voice over
time. So for example, with this, I published my first collection last year. And I've had questions, like I've had people, when's the book coming out? When's the book coming out? For years. I was like, hey, listen, it's not incorrect.
And that's the other thing. I think we're in the age of social media where it's just a constant influx of content every second of every day. If you're a musician, you've got to have 2-3 albums in 1 year. Mm. And for me, I get that. I get that we are now in a digital space and there's people like Donovan that do it very well. And then there's sometimes where the art needs you to sit with it.
Needs like to breathe.
Right? Yeah. Like there are albums that I will listen to on the first listen and it won't mean anything. But on the 5th, 7th listen, I'll be like, whoa. And each song, you know, is bringing out different parts of whatever the album is discussing. And so I think that is a fair way to say your voice isn't just one thing. It evolves. You have to be curious and it shifts and changes according to where you are in life, where you are in society. But there is then that responsibility in your voice as to use it the right way. Let's talk about the obstacles that you have faced in your journey, because from the outside, I would say for you, Donovan, especially, someone might be like, oh, wow, that guy's got it together. He got married. He's got the 2 kids. He's all these brand deals and he's doing so amazing. Tell us about a moment in your creative journey where you were just like, oh, no, what am I doing? Like, what have been some of the obstacles that you've overcome in your creative journey?
Oof, there have been so many. I'll start with, you know, working in advertising. I worked at an above the line agency for 7 years. And working on projects, trying to sell ideas and getting to that final hurdle and you think you've got it and your boss or the client goes, this is absolute rubbish. I don't want any of this. So for 5 days you've been working on it like and haven't slept at all. It just gets chopped completely. And you sit there and obviously the imposter syndrome kicks in and the self-doubt, you know, especially, you know, when you're new and, you know, you're in this environment where people, it's moving so fast. It's such a chaotic industry, especially above the line. And you just feel like, ish, yeah, nah, I don't think I belong here. They might have made a mistake. So every job you start taking on after those things, once you get that first big no, you second guess and you start to question. And then you slowly slip away from who you really are and the ideas and stories that you want to tell. And you start to do what you think people want to see. That becomes a challenge. I think the biggest challenge there is actually to start pulling yourself back to what you know, what you believe, and you know what your values are. And then of course in comedy, it's dying on stage, you know, those are, it's a very difficult thing, you know. You'll have three successful gigs back to back, and then you just do one, your ego is like exploding, and then you get on stage and you just completely die in front of the audience, but in front of like six other comics who are on the same lineup, and they're all like, oh, they don't want to say anything to you. Once again, you start fighting with that thing inside your head, you know, to go, am I good enough? You know, like that voice keeps getting louder all the time. But I mean, you've been bringing up the voice quite a bit. And what I've learned, and I think this is the biggest thing that comedy taught me, and somebody said it well, and they said, unfortunately, in this game, you can't find your voice if you don't use your voice. There's just no way. You can watch a million tutorials. You can get advice from all over the place. But if you're not actually putting in the work, dusting yourself off and just going and trying every single day, it's never going to happen. And there's also no timeline to it. You know, there's the 10,000 hours analogy, which is great. I don't think it applies all the time, you know, because some people do 10,000 hours in a very short time. Other people can take 10 years to get to 10,000 hours. It really is a difficult one to answer that. But every single creative has faced major obstacles. And I think if you haven't faced obstacles or major challenges, you obviously haven't done enough and put yourself out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the only way. It's also one of the only formulas to find your voice, because in that obstacle, you can either choose to let it go or unpack it and figure out why it didn't work. Mm. And in doing so, you start to inject what you know and what you've learned over the years to try and make this thing work. So, yeah, I mean, there have been many, and I still keep making a lot of mistakes.
Never arriving.
It's just the way of the world. The world isn't perfect. And I think the moment we get over perfectionism, what do they call it? Wabi-sabi, the Japanese tradition of embracing imperfect things. Like if a plate breaks, you don't throw it away. What they do is they mend it with gold, you know. So there's a perfect, imperfect object that you look at. So that's what it is. You know, you've got to find the light in whatever darkness or challenge that you face. And that's the part that you have to take every day. And it's also good advice for young creatives who are listening to this right now. It's not easy. There is no timeline. There is no tutorial. Your story is very different. Your experiences are very different. The world shifts every single day. Social media changes. There are so many caveats all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's just about getting up and moving at your pace and constantly trying to put all of yourself on the table as much as possible. And then you'll find it.
Sure. And challenges come, they will. Spokazi, what have been some of the challenges you faced, and how have you overcome them, or one or two?
You can call me back when I've overcome them, when I figured out. Let's have an updated podcast. So I don't know, like 50 years from now. I think definitely the biggest one is similar to what Donovan is saying. That's actually self-doubt. So the biggest challenge is self. And finding self-trust, being able to trust your ideas, being able to trust your creative instincts, despite what everyone may be doing. Because there's a sort of algorithmic approach to a lot of work that's coming out in the world now.
Formulaic, so, like do this and this and this, and then this will happen.
And this, exactly. So input, output. But it's really saying, I am going to have the courage to follow my instinct and see it through and be able to take, whether it works or not, it doesn't matter. Like I'll be able to kind of move, take those lessons with. So I think, for the longest time, especially in my 20s, was the self-doubt and not knowing why. But that's important. That's part of the journey. I don't get to be where I am now without having gone through those. And it takes on different faces at this moment. I mean, some of the specific ones it'll also include performing in front of 10 or 20 people in a 1,500 seater because the marketing was not good.
but it's also hard because when you're doing the marketing yourself and you're doing all the roles and then you're performing and you're preparing to perform. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I'm getting from both of you is that obstacles will be there. They should be there to grow you in your discipline, but also you need to constantly reassure yourself that you belong right now where you are and you deserve to be there and you are working at it, and also use your voice. Don't be watching. Yeah,
it's in using it that you develop it. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, if I can add something just to this, is that I think when I was younger, I felt like art was this higher, which it is. It's this higher calling that allows you to sort of remove yourself from society and, you know, look upon the masses and sort of have all this wisdom that you want to impart upon them, you know? And then now I'm like, art is teaching me how to live. Like there's this symbiosis and kind of synergy between I need to be a certain kind of person or I need to be shaped into a certain kind of person to produce certain kinds of work. But also the more I'm resilient, the more I push through difficulty, the more I sit with a poem for like 10 hours because I only have this one line and it's over and over and I'm scratching out and realizing after all of that, it doesn't work and I have to throw the whole poem out and only one line is good. And that I'll use that as the basis for a new poem. Those things, that kind of resilience has been teaching me how to live.
Sure. Mm.
Rather than these, you know, it's separate from
something.
Something
to be avoided, actually something to be embraced.
So obstacles are important because, again, it's been teaching me how to live. And the more I live, the more it comes back into my work. So those things have to happen together.
And also, I think what I'm hearing there as well is that you know, creativity and art has the opportunity for connection with people. And how are you going to connect to them if you don't engage in your own stuff? And how are you going to write work that touches people, whether it's, like you were saying, Donovan, to like suspend reality in a way or to put them into another reality or to bring across something really beautiful that touches you and you like look at something or hear something and it's awe and wonder. Whatever that experience is that you're trying to elicit from people, if you're avoiding that in your own life at all costs because you're not willing to like take the risk and immerse yourself, you can't do for other people what you can't do for yourself. And I think like that's been a profound thing for me to realize in my creative journey is like I need to be willing to get in the dirty trenches myself if that's what I want to show other people.
Yeah
There's like the two words that have been, it's so weird, you know, it's with social media and I guess the microwave generation where everybody wants things condensed. It must be, give it to me in one line. Like, how do you describe something?
Everything's a pitch.
Everything's a line. Or there isn't a word, guys. This is like a long-term thing. But I'm starting to list like just words that resonate with me and things that I have to like live by. And the two that like I think fit well together, especially in our game, is grit and gratitude. It's the grit that gets you the privilege of being able to tell your story and sell your crazy ideas and sell your words and not have a 9-to-5 and not listen to a boss. You know, there's something so powerful about that because it takes extreme vulnerability to be able to do what you do. And there are very few people who can do it. And that's the magic sauce right there. You know, if you're vulnerable enough to expose yourself on a stage in front of 10 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, you will never be able to describe to somebody what that feeling is like when they reciprocate and respond to whatever you're saying. That connection is just, it really can never be described, you know. The thing that I'm trying to work on, because I do so many different things and things come so fast all the time, I never give myself enough time to be grateful for the position that I'm in and to sit back and think about the things that I've managed to do.
Yeah.
Think about where I've come from and how, you know, things have panned out along the way. You know, you're just kind of always fighting. But I think that for creative people, and it's something that we often struggle with, you're always chasing the next thing. You're always trying to put the next idea out. You never stopped and breathe and just reflect and go, man, I think I made it like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like maybe I did. Like what is, like who's to say when you make it? You know, if you don't put a monetary value on it, but if you feel like you've hit your goal in terms of shucks, like I did that and I would never have ever imagined I would be there, you know?
I think how artists can also just recenter themselves, because, you know, everything is happening so fast. We need to scrap that rule that says you are as good as your last show. I used to live by this. And Donovan, you mentioned something about always chasing the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And then you're saying actually you needed to take a pause so you could give the, you know, the next idea. And I think if we stop putting our worth and attach it to only our careers or work, it will be a much better life for all artists. Because, yeah, we really honestly also put so much pressure to be perfect, the perfection thing. I must get it right the first time. If they don't love me, I've failed. If they don't like this set, I've failed. I was at a show yesterday with a dead crowd. It wasn't me.
Because I'm very entertaining. It would never happen to you.
No, but afterwards I got off and I had to have a pep talk with myself and be like, okay, that set didn't work for this particular crowd, and then go back instead of saying, oh my god, I suck, I'm not going to do this set again. I was like, okay, what didn't work? What hit, and was I present? And then I realized I'd actually just been tired the whole day. It was my birthday yesterday and I shouldn't have been on stage. Thank you. I shouldn't have been on stage.
No, take your birthday off.
I should have. Yeah. I didn't. I was going to support other artists. And then they're like, hey, we've got so-and-so in the audience. Are you going to jump up? And there's no room also. So it's also learning to say no. And listen to your inner voice.
Rato. If in all my minute 39 years, who tell us it's just Christmas? December bunnies. If I can impart some wisdom, right? I'm kidding. But if I were to say one thing to emerging, I also don't like that word, but to creatives that are sort of still
starting
out, is start with your mind. If in your arsenal of tools around developing skills, develop your mind. Your ability for your self-talk is so important, because I think I spend a lot of time outsourcing what I thought about myself, what I thought about my work, what I thought about a lot of things to other people. So whether it's applause, whether it's lack of applause, that is what ended up determining what I thought was my value. But now the development that I do, like I said, I mentioned meditation, for example, is what allows me to then debrief after a performance and say, okay, what is it? You can sort of look at it a little more, take a step back, to be able to take a step back from your thoughts, from the high, from the adrenaline, all of those things. If you can develop your mind and your ability to talk to yourself and what you say to yourself, I think you'll be able to survive this industry.
I heard someone once say, you shouldn't say anything to yourself that you wouldn't say to someone else. And often we treat other people with so much more respect than we do our own, than we do ourselves. And I love what you're saying there. I think developing that more gentle self-talk is really, really important.
For 30 years, the V&A Waterfront has been a champion of the arts. Our Immersive Artist Alliance program offers hands-on experience and skills development across various disciplines, including sculpture, videography, and music production. Exclusive networking events and virtual galleries also offer more opportunities for artists to connect, collaborate, and showcase their work. Sound like your kind of thing? Apply to join our vibrant community at the link in the show notes. We'd love to welcome you.
Donovan and Sipokazi, thank you so much for what you've shared so far. And something that's really important to us on this podcast is that we actually hear questions from our listeners and from our audience. And this is a question that came out at an Artist Alliance community workshop recently. And I would love to hear your thoughts on this one. So the question is, how did you find your niche as a creative and incorporate that into a successful business, or I guess into a way of sustaining yourselves? Let's start with you, Donovan.
I don't know if I have a niche as such, but I have, I guess, little touch points, you know, that always kind of seem to show up in everything that I do. One of those being wit, minimalism. I'm a big fan of minimalism. When I studied graphic design and I was in the library, I paged through hundreds and hundreds of books just trying to find a thing that resonated with me. And I stumbled upon a French illustrator still alive called Guy Ballou, and he does these very, very minimal paintings for, you know, publications, etc. But there's always like a slight quirk to them, and there's just something so beautiful about abstraction. So just taking stuff out but leaving just enough to still tell a powerful story, which then filters into comedy. You know, you start to figure out that that's about. You know, you got to get to that punchline as quickly and as punchy as possible. And like right now, I work with a big streaming service. I'm the creative director for their social department. And, you know, we write a lot of stuff for, you know, promos, you know, content promos for them. And same thing applies. I always try and go, okay, cool. We're speaking to so many people. It's such a wide audience that needs to understand this. How do we simplify it down to its core and really make it land and make it make sense and make it super relatable?
That's so good. Thanks, Donovan. And you, Sipakazi, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so for me, it's been experimentation. So in terms of niche, has been experimentation and bringing this multidisciplinary approach to all the work that I do. So even with the book, for example, it's a poetry collection, but it incorporates insomi. So I've you know, I've brought in oral storytelling into the book, also sort of playing around with language. So that, in inverted commas, authenticity of this tension between languages that actually exist on the page. So building that, there's a poem that's written like a screenplay, for example. I draw from Shakespeare, I draw from the Bible, I draw from like so many different kind of forms. So a kind of irreverence. I don't allow myself, I'm not a purist. I think that's probably part of the power where I allow myself to let these different forms be in conversation. So bringing poetry on stage, poetry into film, you know, poetry with music and dance and all of those things. So me, I have my own things. I have my own questions that I'm constantly pursuing. I think even when I write, so a similar thing in terms of corporate, because there's sometimes a question, and this will sort of answer the business question, which partnership is very important. So having a manager, you know, got my social media manager, PR and so on. So they help a lot with the business side of things. So having a team that also holds you accountable, but also supports the work that you do. Because the more I can outsource certain things, the more time I have to really focus on what I do.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, because sometimes I get this question of with corporate gigs, and again, how do you get return clients? You know, what is it? So it's the professionalism. It's making sure that you are reliable, as Donovan has said, and all of these things, they don't have to worry about what you do. They can trust that once they put you there, they can go and focus on the other fires that they have to put out. But also, I think for me, there's this tension of, yeah, but if you do corporate, aren't you a sellout? I just always bring, I always bring part of myself, a big part of myself. Here's the brief, ne? But it's always going to be from a certain perspective. So I'm bringing, I'm bringing my blackness, I'm bringing my South Africanness, I'm bringing that perspective into whatever the brief is that generally actually connects with the heart. It doesn't matter if it's a global audience that I'm working with. It doesn't matter what it is, but it does connect to the heart. It's also treating people the same. If I'm doing, I mean, I'm going to a book club, for example, in a Philippi, right? And sometimes I work with executives from all over the world and stuff. It, for me, that's the same. Those are the same people. There's no thing about, okay, now I must bring less. I must bring more, whatever. I'm bringing spots and having that conversation. So the idea, also me, I don't mind, man. I don't mind telling truth to the very people that have hired me. So sometimes, well, call out. I remember the poem that I did for Sona a couple of years ago, where I was like calling out, it was about the C word.
I don't want to mention it.
C word.
I moved on. Girl. I have been thinking, what is this C word? Getting into swear words. Yeah. I'm like, what?
No. COVID. So, and in this poem, I'm like, I'm calling out government for PPE corruption, for, you know, the murder of, I think it was Carlos Khoza. In the poem that they hired me to come in and share. So it's also holding that integrity and just having a little bit of wisdom around what the balance is between what you're being asked to do and what is actually needed. Because sometimes, respectfully, you are given a brief, but you can kind of, I think as an artist, it is actually part of our responsibility to say, here's what you say you want, but also here's what you need. You know, and often that's what takes things to the hard space. So it does need courage. It does need courage.
Well, I feel like I am in a very prestigious lecture. I am learning so much.
I'm not here for it.
Masterclass is a better way.
I'm a nerd. I attend lectures for fun. We had asked both you, Donovan and Spokazi, to write a letter to your younger self. The time is now. Would you like to share? Spokazi, we'll start with you.
Okay. So I already told you before we gathered that I'm going to cheat because I'm going to read a poem. My collection is called Weeping Becomes a River. And I wrote this poem that actually speaks to that. Because I've been asked the question, why this time? Why this? And I think it, because it's also quite vulnerable. I'm just contextualizing that these are things that I've learned in my journey that have finally allowed me to reach a certain place of truth in my work that wasn't there before, because I was too concerned about reception, about how my work would be received, and not what it is, what work is actually coming through me, and that, you know. So if you are starting out, these are things I wish I'd said, I'd known when I was in high school, starting writing and so on. But I'm also glad that I've gone on the journey that I have in order to get to this poem. And so it's my letter. Compensation patterns. I tried to learn French for 2 weeks at university. Tripped on conjugations and quit. Even less fluent in comprehending how my pain ached for attention. Two signs. One in left breast, the other my right foot. Body gathered breath to scream, its thrust pinned under a skin of silence, made an abscess and a cyst. Antibiotics and syringe cleared symptoms, but not years of unsaid things fermented in my throat. Distraction, self-medication. When cancer has soaked its feet in your bloodline and you wake up to a mass, your first thought is a tumor. The next is dying with a malignant tongue. Silence and agreeability prevent love from leaving. This is what poetry becomes to you. A decoy for loved ones who beg you to express your feelings without the language to receive them. Retreat into your mind, abandon your heart, and write God's people into his kingdom with your poems. Press play on Brené Brown's TED Talk, and soon you are crying under your blankets, reaching for grief, for rage, for love, breath, and everything the scan reveals. Mieux vaut prévenir que guérir. Prevention is better than cure. I think what I want to say with this poem is we're having all of these wonderful conversations about the business aspects, really important. But I think at the heart of it is if you're feeling discouraged, if you're feeling your family is saying things and, you know, you're just feeling isolated. But at the end of the day, we have to keep doing this. We have to keep putting out creativity. We have to keep making the world a little bit better than the way that we find it. So I think even though we are looking at all of these things, it's not to lose the heart of why this gift has been given to you. And hopefully we can support each other as artists, that even, because there's a lot of pain, but that we support each other in navigating that experience. So please don't stop.
It's beautiful.
Don't stop.
I mean, that's what essentially Creative Allies is about, is to be an ally. I mean, we can't help in a lot of ways, but what we can do is reaffirm your journey and that you should actually continue, because we need your work. We need all of our work. Donovan, your letter to Transkei, Donovan.
That was beautiful, man. But mine is, it's very simple, and I must be honest, like I wrote this and I got a tad bit emotional. You know, I just a tad bit. I pushed back the tear though. I pushed it back because, you know, we're like hard and tough out here.
Donovan, you said you go to therapy. Come on. Yeah. Please change the narrative for us.
My job is to be tough.
Yeah, you don't need to push back the tear in this emotion.
It was when I was, you know, it's very short, it's very concise, but it's that gratitude thing I was talking about. And I'm so glad that you put this out, because it forced me to really like think back and go, wow, man, you're here. Like, we did this. So this is a letter to my younger self. It says, "Dear Donovan, thank you for always being so curious about art, about design, and just the world in general. Man, you wouldn't believe all the experience that came from you persisting and always zagging when everyone else just wanted to zig. There's so much we still need to do and explore, but right now I'm trying my absolute best to dig deep and harness that unfiltered resilience and passion that you had when there were no expectations other than to have fun while creating. I'll always keep fighting to always get us to that state of beautiful flow. You're my biggest inspiration within." You know, this is also another big thing that I'm trying to work on. And I think Uspoka, as you mentioned it earlier, but there aren't enough of these conversations. There aren't enough creative people being big brothers and big sisters, you know, up there, like really trying to like just bring people up as much as possible. Like right now, my philosophy, I'm really just trying to be the person that I needed when I was younger.
Yeah.
Because there was no one, you know, I had to fight and really, really just find this out for myself, but the world right now is so saturated with everyone trying to do the same thing. It's so saturated with nothingness. It's forcing people to go down this really dark, worthless path of just wanting to be famous, but with no soul and no purpose. Yeah. So I think it's our biggest responsibility to have more of these conversations and just share and pass the baton as much as we can so that we can keep growing, because there's so much life and there's so many stories and there's just so much to be shared from South Africa. But it's our responsibility to break that mindset that the arts and what we do and storytelling is probably the most powerful tool that we have against the rest of the world. And that's what we have to like really own as much as possible in whatever medium you choose to express yourself in. So whoever's listening to this, good luck. And you really, really do have this, and you are absolutely worth everything. Just do not let them tell you that this ain't nothing.
Well, we are stronger as a collective, for sure. Thank you, Donovan and Spokazi, for joining us. I found this super insightful. I'm going to look forward to reading the notes that I've written. Thank you for sharing your time and your generosity. And to more good work, to more of everything.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Creative Allies. We really appreciate this. And also, if there's someone who's listening now who considers themselves an emerging artist, I look forward to you sitting in this chair and me on the other side listening to what you say.
Beautiful.
If you enjoyed this episode of Creative Allies, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe for more. In upcoming episodes, we'll be discussing hot topics for creatives, such as how to negotiate rates, managing your finances, dealing with imposter syndrome, and conquering creative blocks. Remember, you can join our WhatsApp channel by clicking the link in the show notes. You can also subscribe to the Artist Alliance newsletter to get the latest news. Check the show notes for the link to our website. Thanks for listening. I look forward to next time.
See you next time.
See you next time.